developer wakes up on Saturday and checks the status page because yesterday's run started failing. The dependency that failed isn't a queue, a token limit, or a bad deploy. It's the model. Anthropic's status incident says access to Claude Fable 5 and Claude Mythos 5 has been suspended, and the tech meme cluster around it ties that suspension to a reported U.S. government export control directive. That's the concrete event today. Two flagship-hosted models moved from product availability into a government-controlled access problem, at least temporarily.
And the uncomfortable part for a builder is how ordinary the failure looks from the outside. Your CI job doesn't know whether the model disappeared because of a safety incident, a pricing change, a government order, or somebody's internal rollback. It just knows the model name stopped working. If you had agents depending on Fable or Mythos, the failure hits concrete work first. Code review, analysis, red team work, and enterprise workflows all have to answer the same question. What does the fallback do now?
Right. The order of operations matters here. We have a confirmed suspension from Anthropic's status page. We have reporting, summarized by TechMeme, that frames the cause as a U.S. government export control action tied to national security concerns and reported jailbreak evidence. I haven't seen a primary technical artifact for the jailbreak report itself, so I'm not going to treat the jailbreak details as settled fact. The narrower claim is still consequential. Access changed globally for users before the ordinary customer surface could explain it in a satisfying way.
That's also why this isn't just another entry in the Fable and Mythos saga from earlier this week. We already had the discussion about data retention, safeguards, and research access. Today changes the axis. Before, a team asked whether it could use this model under the vendor terms. Now it has to ask whether a government instruction can alter the set of models its system can call with enough speed that its own change management process never gets a vote.
The overview for today is policy heavy, but it isn't abstract. First, the Anthropic shutdown and the access mechanics around it. Then, the reaction from open model and local model people, because the reaction is really about dependency design. We also have the UK infrastructure push, the less dramatic side of state involvement, money, chips, and talent. After that, state attorneys general are pressing OpenAI, where legal discovery starts to touch safety and user impact claims. We close with a few builder notes. OpenAI reportedly buying Ona to run Codex agents inside enterprise clouds, GLM 5.2 showing up as a coding model update, and Visa with OpenAI on agentic transactions.
So this isn't a morality play where the government plays villain, open models play hero, and agents supply the scare music. It's more practical than that. Hosted models are getting wrapped in policy. Open models have their own responsibilities. National compute plans still have to become capacity. Enterprise agents need identity, networking, logs, and permissions. Payments need dispute handling. Different stories, each one putting pressure on the system boundary.
Anthropic's status page is the source I would start with because it gives us the operational fact without the commentary. The Hacker News item points to that incident. Anthropic suspended access to Claude Mythos 5 and Claude Fable 5. The company said it was working to restore access. That's sparse, but sparse status pages are often how developers first meet policy.
Sparse is exactly the problem. A status page can tell you whether the vendor thinks the service is degraded. It usually can't tell you whether your legal team should freeze a rollout, whether your foreign national employees can touch a workflow, whether a customer environment has to be remapped, or whether a saved prompt is now subject to a different rule. The status object is pretending to be an outage object, but the cause doesn't behave like an outage.
TechMeme's selected coverage says the suspension followed a U.S. government order, with the later item connecting it to an Amazon jailbreak report. Again, we need to stay close to the evidence. I haven't read a primary Amazon report in the sources, and the upstream curation notes warn not to overstate the jailbreak material. So the better sentence is, reporting says jailbreak evidence was part of the policy context, and Anthropic's visible response was to disable access while it works on restoration.
That phrasing matters. A one jailbreak took down two models version makes people overfit to the exploit. The export control version asks a better engineering question. Which access rules can reach a hosted model endpoint? Those rules determine which users and regions still qualify. Then they determine which accounts, workloads, and vendors are allowed to keep calling the model when the rule changes.
The foreign national detail needs extra restraint. The wider candidate pool includes reporting and commentary about foreign access, deemed exports, and model outputs. Those are serious legal categories, but we don't have the actual order text. So on air, I wouldn't say the rule definitely means X for every non-US employee or every enterprise account. I would say the incident is being reported as an export control action, and that is enough to make access control, residency, and employee eligibility part of model operations.
This gets close to the day-to-day craft fast. A lot of teams have model abstraction layers now. They can switch from one provider to another in code, at least in theory. But an export control event doesn't only ask whether you can swap the endpoint, it asks whether the replacement model is approved for the same users, whether the prompts can leave the same environment, whether the logs are retained under the same policy, and whether the model's refusal behavior changes the output contract.
I also think there's a trust cost that isn't solved by a better status page. An individual developer may be annoyed for a day. An enterprise buyer has to ask whether the vendor can give an access continuity story under government intervention. Not a guarantee, because nobody sensible can guarantee immunity from law, but a procedure, notice, and alternatives. You also need data boundaries, support escalation, and a way to know whether your account is affected.
And the answer might be different by workload. If the model is drafting marketing copy, you can probably pause. If it's reviewing code for security-sensitive deployments, you need a replacement path. If it's embedded in support, you need a degradation mode. If it's part of an agent that can take actions, you need to make sure the fallback doesn't get broader permissions just because the primary model is unavailable.
That's the line I keep coming back to in practical terms. Model access is now a compliance surface. It was already a vendor dependency, a cost dependency, and a quality dependency. Today makes the government policy layer hard to ignore. The least dramatic lesson is also the most useful one. Teams should know what happens when the model they prefer isn't legally, contractually, or operationally available.
And they should test it. Not with a slide that says multi-model strategy. Run the test with the preferred model disabled. Give the fallback model a different context window and safety profile. Then make the agent decide whether to continue, stop, or ask a human. The stop condition is part of the product now.
Within hours, the Anthropic incident turned into an open and local AI argument. The Hacker News story called Open Source AI Must Win was the big public marker in the sources, and the local LLAMA post made the same point in a rougher form. If a hosted model can be disabled globally, developers want something they can run themselves.
That reaction is predictable, but it isn't trivial. Local models used to be framed as a capability race. Can this open model match the hosted frontier? Today, the argument is more like disaster recovery. Maybe the local model is worse. Maybe it's slower. Maybe it needs a smaller task. But if it runs inside your environment and you can keep using it under your own policy, it changes the failure plan.
Jeremy Howard's tweet and Nathan Lambert's reaction are in the sources as counterpoints around government overreach and the open ecosystem. I wouldn't collapse those into one position. There's a principled civil liberties concern here, a software sovereignty concern, and a practical engineering concern. They overlap, but they aren't identical.
The engineering version is the one I find most actionable. If your application has three classes of model work, you can split them. Some calls need the hosted frontier model because they require the best reasoning you can buy. Some calls can run on a smaller open model because they are classification, extraction, formatting, or local code assistance. Some calls shouldn't continue at all when the policy context changes. That design gives you more options than a single giant dependency.
There's a temptation, especially today, to say open models solve this. I don't think they do, at least not cleanly. Open weights don't erase export controls, safety law, procurement rules, or internal governance. If you are a company operating internationally, you can still have restrictions on who can run what, where the weights sit, and what outputs are allowed. But open models do move some control from a remote vendor account into your own operational environment.
And they move responsibility with it. If you self-host a capable model, you own more than inference. You need a patch cycle, evals, abuse monitoring, access logs, and key management. People sometimes talk about local models as if the machine under your desk is a jurisdiction-free zone. It isn't. It's just a different place for the rules and the maintenance to live.
The GLM 5.2 item later in the sources fits here as a small but relevant developer update. Z.AI and related posts say, GLM 5.2 is starting to appear for coding users, with OpenWeight and MIT license discussions circulating in local LLAMA. That belongs at its actual altitude, useful if the availability and license details hold up, not the main story of the day. But on this particular Saturday, another coding model arriving under a more open distribution story reads differently than it would have yesterday.
Yes, but I would still separate availability from aspiration. A post saying a model is coming next week or available to a set of coding plan users isn't the same as a model card and a license file. Developers also need weights, evals, quantized builds, and install notes they can follow. The value appears when somebody can put it in the fallback matrix and run the same tasks against it.
That is a good standard. The local model response shouldn't become vibes about independence. It should become a table, the task and the primary model, then name the fallback model, the data boundary, the allowed users, the quality threshold, and the stop condition. The hosted frontier model might still be the right answer for the highest value work. Now the fallback plan has to account for policy withdrawal, not just latency and price.
And if the fallback is worse, say so in the product. Degraded mode is allowed. A system that says, I can summarize and classify while Fable is unavailable, but I won't autonomously edit production code, is a more trustworthy system than one that silently swaps in a weaker model and keeps the same permissions.
The Guardian item from this morning gives the counterweight to the Anthropic story. The UK government used London Tech Week to talk about AI hardware, chips, and national capability. That is also state involvement in AI, but it's the capacity-building version rather than the access restriction version.
And it matters because governments are realizing that AI policy without compute is mostly paperwork. If you want domestic capability, you need chips, power, data centers, talent, procurement, and a way for researchers and companies to get usable access. The hard part is that every one of those nouns becomes a delivery program.
The curation notes caution not to inflate the UK announcement into a turning point unless the primary article has specific funded commitments. Since I don't have the full article text through the toolbridge, I am going to keep the claim modest. The fresh fact is that the UK is putting AI hardware and chip investment into the public story at London Tech Week. National AI strategies now have to talk about physical capacity. Rules and research papers don't carry the plan by themselves.
That is a useful contrast with the Anthropic order. One side says certain model access may be restricted because the capability is sensitive. The other side says governments need more domestic access to chips because capability is strategic. Those two ideas can coexist inside the same government. They also pull against each other when startups, universities, and enterprises ask what they can actually use.
Antares's tweet is in the sources as commentary around talent repatriation, GPU funding, and international partnerships. I wouldn't treat it as policy evidence. It's a good signal of how builders translate national AI plans into implementation questions. Who comes home? Who gets compute? Which partners are trusted? Which workloads get priority?
And who runs the queue? National compute plans have to answer that sooner than they expect. If the state helps fund GPUs, somebody decides whether a university lab, a defense contractor, a startup, or a public sector project gets time on them. The allocation policy becomes part of the AI system, even if nobody calls it that.
There's also a geography point here. The U.S. export control story reminds everyone that frontier models are entangled with national security. The UK infrastructure story reminds everyone outside the biggest US cloud orbit that using AI and building AI aren't the same posture. Buying API access gives you capability. Building domestic infrastructure gives you bargaining power, training capacity, and maybe a little more resilience when access rules change.
Maybe. It also gives you an expensive maintenance bill and a lot of ways to underdeliver. Chips need power before they become capacity, and power needs networking before developers can use it. A data center also needs a developer program, models, support, and procurement paths before it changes anyone's options. The announcement is the start of a list, not the completed system.
That is the calibration I like. The UK push belongs in the episode because it shows the broader state role around AI infrastructure. It doesn't need to be treated as a grand pivot. It's a government saying, we need a place in the compute stack. The next evidence that would matter is specific funding and procurement mechanics. It should also show who gets access and whether builders in the UK get better options.
And whether it survives contact with grid connection dates, chip supply, and hiring. Sorry, not glamorous, but if the plan depends on hardware, the hardware gets a vote.
The OpenAI item is a different kind of pressure. CNBC reports that OpenAI says it's engaging constructively with state attorneys general after a reported subpoena. TechMeme groups the story as state AG scrutiny of OpenAI, in the same window as the Anthropic export control story. This is the domestic legal track rather than the national security access track.
And legal discovery has a different texture than public debate. A blog post can say the company cares about safety. A hearing can ask for a speech. A subpoena can ask for documents, messages, policies, studies, incident records, and user impact analysis. That changes the incentives around what a lab has actually written down.
The agenda says the subpoena reportedly covers a wide range of activities and user impacts. I don't want to speculate beyond that. We don't have the subpoena text in the sources. The grounded point is that state attorneys general can use consumer protection and public interest authority to press a major AI lab for records, and OpenAI's public response is that it's engaging constructively.
That phrase, engaging constructively, says cooperation without conceding the premise. Fair enough. But if you are inside an AI company, the practical lesson is that your safety process, your escalation logs, and your product claims may become evidence. They aren't just internal quality artifacts.
A light connection to earlier Construct coverage helps here, without replaying it. Yesterday's Construct episode talked about legal scrutiny of AI records and evidence. Today gives us another example. Frontier AI companies are moving into a period where what they said internally, what they measured, and what they shipped may be compared by people with subpoena power.
The comparison matters. A public claim that the system reduces harm has to survive the internal record. If the metric was underdefined or the reviewer queue was overloaded, that gap becomes legible. A public claim that users are in control has the same problem if the logs show confusing defaults or hidden retention. Discovery rewards plain record keeping and punishes hand-wavy safety language.
And for developers who aren't OpenAI, this is still relevant. Teams building on top of these systems inherit changes from the lab's legal environment. That can touch the API, data retention rules, audit requirements, and indemnity posture. Legal scrutiny upstream becomes product work downstream.
Exactly. A startup using OpenAI for a regulated workflow may not care about the politics of state AGs day to day. It will care if the vendor changes logging, age gating, content policy, data controls, or enterprise paperwork. The legal process turns into a checklist somebody in engineering has to satisfy.
The accountability point stays fairly narrow. State AG scrutiny doesn't mean OpenAI did something wrong. It means state-level officials are asking for records and OpenAI has to respond. The story matters because AI labs have become important enough that ordinary U.S. consumer protection machinery is now part of their operating environment.
And that machinery is slower than a model release. That is a tension every lab is going to keep feeling. You can ship a capability in weeks. You may have to defend the surrounding process for years.
The Forbes item says OpenAI is reportedly buying Ona, formerly Gitpod, to run Codex agents inside enterprise clouds. Because this is reporting rather than an OpenAI confirmation in the sources, I would keep the attribution attached. Forbes reports the acquisition. The reason it fits today isn't that it proves a grand agent strategy. It points at a very practical deployment problem.
Where does the agent run? That question used to sound like implementation detail. For enterprise coding agents, it's product strategy. If the agent needs repository access, build secrets, internal package registries, test environments, ticket context, and maybe production-like data, the runtime location determines what the enterprise security team can approve.
Exactly. Recent episodes already covered Codex and enterprise workflow depth, so this should be a concise update. The fresh angle is the execution environment. A coding agent in a browser tab is one product. A coding agent running inside a customer-controlled cloud
near the repo and build system is another. It changes identity and networking. It also changes audit logs, data exposure, and incident response.
And it changes trust. A company might not want source code, secrets, or build logs flowing through a vendor-managed workspace if it can avoid it. But it might accept a vendor-supplied agent that runs inside a controlled environment with its own network policies. That doesn't make the agent safe by default. It makes the review concrete.
Chris Tate's tweet in The Sources talks about integrating Claude, Codex, and Pi into products, and Jason Liu's tweet is included as a practical Codex in team note. I would use both as background color rather than primary evidence. The stronger primary source is the Forbes acquisition report, and the builder question is, are coding agents becoming less about chat and more about managed execution environments?
They have to. A serious coding agent needs a file system, a package manager, a test runner, credentials with limited scope, and a way to report what it changed. The model is only one component. The runtime is where mistakes become observable or invisible.
That also ties back to the Anthropic story without forcing the connection. Model access can change because of policy. Agent runtimes are moving into enterprise-controlled environments. Architecture teams are going to ask for a clearer split. The model provider in one place, the execution environment in another, with audit trails, fallback rules, and approvals spelled out.
Separation helps, but it also exposes how many contracts the product has to honor. The model contract says what the agent can reason about. The runtime contract says what it can touch. The enterprise contract says where data lives. The human approval contract says when the agent stops. If any one of those is vague, the demo looks better than the deployment.
That is why I would treat the owner report as a small enterprise infrastructure clue, not a spectacle. If the acquisition is confirmed, it suggests OpenAI wants more control over the place where Codex work happens. That is a rational direction. The harder proof will be admin controls and tenant isolation. Network policy and logs matter too, along with whether teams can run agents without creating a new security exception every time.
A good enterprise agent pitch will sound less like, our model writes code, and more like, here is the environment and the permissions. Here is the audit log, the rollback path, and what happens when the model provider is unavailable. That sales deck is less fun. An enterprise can actually buy that version.
Two smaller items belong near the end. First, GLM 5.2. Z.AI posted about GLM 5.2 becoming available for coding users. Zixuan Li had a supporting post, and local LLAAMA was already talking about open weights and an MIT license next week. I wouldn't turn that into a benchmark segment without a primary model card, but for developers, it's a note to check availability and license, then task fit.
That is the right size for it. If it's available to your coding plan today, try it on your own repo tasks. If the open weights and license arrive next week, read the license file and run your regression set. The interesting question isn't whether the announcement sounds competitive, it's whether the model can handle the parts of coding work you can measure, edits and tests. Then try refactors, explanations, and refusal behavior around dangerous changes.
Second, ZDNet covers OpenAI and Visa pushing agentic transactions forward. This overlaps with recent agent purchase coverage, so I don't want to retell the whole story. The useful reminder is that payments are where agent autonomy has to meet permissioning and reversibility. Fraud controls and customer support matter just as much.
Payments turn an agent from a recommender into an actor with consequences. If it buys the wrong thing, the system needs a receipt and an authorization trail. It also needs a dispute path, plus some way to distinguish user intent from prompt drift or malicious instruction. Visa's presence makes sense because card networks already live in that world.
And it mirrors the Codex runtime point. A purchasing agent isn't just a better model. It puts the model inside an authorization system. A coding agent sits inside a development environment. A hosted frontier model sits inside law, contracts, infrastructure, and status pages.
That is a lot for one Saturday, but it isn't one giant thesis. It's a set of product surfaces getting more explicit. Model access, local fallback, national capacity, legal discovery, enterprise runtimes, and payments each force a different boundary into view.
After today, I would do one practical exercise. For any AI system that matters, write down three changes your code won't announce. The model can become unavailable. The policy around it can change. The environment where the agent runs can become unacceptable to a customer or regulator.
then decide whether the system stops, falls back, or asks a person.
And if the answer is fallback, make the fallback smaller than the original promise, unless you have proof it can carry the same task. A smaller, explicit, degraded mode beats a full-speed agent pretending nothing changed.
That is where I would leave the episode's practical weight. Anthropic suspension may resolve quickly, or the details may get more complicated as reporting catches up. But the access assumption changed today. Teams that treat frontier models as ordinary APIs need a second document next to the integration guide. It should say who can use the model, where they can use it, which policy applies, and what the system does when the answer changes. Linar Kess.